From the studios of KPCW in Park City, this is Cool Science Radio.
Science and technology that's accessible and entertaining.
If we can understand it, you can understand it.
I'm Lynn Ware Peake.
And I'm John Wells.
And welcome back to Cool Science Radio. I'm John Wells here with Lynn Ware Peake. Our next guest is Raja Dhir, who is the co-founder of Seed, which is a company that packages beneficial microbes into probiotic products. There's a community of 38 trillion microorganisms, mostly bacteria, living in and on us. And this is our microbiome, our non-human half that, as it turns out, we can't live without. Seed believes that our microbiome will radically transform our approach to medicine, hygiene, diet, and living. Raja Dhir, welcome to Cool Science Radio.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
Well, it's really nice to have you. And we're looking at your company that you co-founded, Seed, and doing a little background check on you. And it's just fascinating. What do we know and what do we not know about gut health?
Well, you know, gut health is a very broad term. If you look at Western, Eastern, global, historical perspectives, it's, started with Hippocrates saying that it's central to health. In Eastern medicine, it's played a very prominent role. But very recently, I would say traditional Western medicine has caught up with the role of microbes in the overall health of the gut and the body. And this was when next generation sequencing techniques basically emerged in, I would say, the early to mid 2000s, that allowed us to really get a closer look at what's going on in there and how these organisms are implicated, not just in local gut health, things like how well you digest your food, the nutrients you absorb, the transit time, the regularity of your bowel movements. All these things are locally regulated, but we're just starting to scratch the surface on how gut health also plays a role across other organ systems in the body.
And similar to COVID-19, there are a lot of people that show up on TV or radio and they're talking about the microbiome that really aren't qualified to be talking about it. What are some of the common misconceptions about gut health and the microbiome?
Yeah, it's a really good question. I feel like I'm a part founder and part fact checker because there's, you know, so much misinformation that gets propagated, particularly when somebody has an interest in a particular position or an agenda. But there are a lot of myths. So the first and most common is that a lot of people still believe there's the organisms in your gut outnumber us 10 to 1. 100 trillion is the number that you hear throwing around. Well, that's recently been corrected. We now know it's about 1 to 1. 38 trillion human cells, about 38 trillion or so in the morning, a little bit less throughout the day. It varies. Microbial cells, right? And so most of those are focused in your gut. In terms of myths around gut health and probiotics, you'll see anywhere where there's like a very mature market, consumers are buying a lot of products, fermented foods, dietary supplements, but not really all probiotics or products that claim to be probiotic really do or have been validated to have some effect in the body. So the way that we think about this is the scientific definition of probiotics was actually authored by our chief scientist who chaired the UN World Health Organization panel back in 2001. And by definition, a probiotic is a live organism that confers a health benefit to a host. And so this means that you must have some evidence or some data to suggest that this organism or this strain would be beneficial if you take it and for a particular purpose. So just being a bacteria, just being a fermented food, that's not really enough. There might be some very, surface level benefits that you get, like it's easier to digest things that are fermented because they're basically pre-digested. But really a probiotic is a very strict scientific definition, and very few products or foods really actually qualify. So I would say that's probably the biggest myth. And then the second one, or the third one, I should say, is that a lot of people have been pretty interested or clued into this concept of the gut-brain axis. It started when studies found that mice, actually, when you give them very specific strains of bacteria, their symptom, their tolerance to anxiety and survival instinct and stress-inducing behaviors actually increases. And so this is really fascinating because, you know, we all thought when this research came out, well, what if, you know, because the gut's involved through the vagus nerve and signals to the brain, what if we could improve our mental health or our cognition through supplementation or through probiotics? But really, that hasn't panned out yet. A lot of the studies that have looked in humans haven't been very convincing or have not been in a big population or able to be reproduced. And although there is a lot of promise, there's one massive study that came out in Nature Microbiology, one of the top scientific journals by Professor Jerome Reyes's group last year. And that was a well-powered study. They looked at 1,000 people with depression and found across the board, two organisms were deficient in people that were depressed compared to those that had normal or what you'd call healthy, non-depressive behavior and mood. And so these studies are very interesting, but it's too far and it's a big misconception to say that probiotics or now we know what to do or what the right composition is for mental health. But certainly I would say that's the third and biggest area amongst the general public.
Mm-hmm. Raja, can you cite that study again? I know our listeners are probably scrambling to write that down.
Yeah, it's by Jerome Reyes, R-A-E-S, and it was in Nature Microbiology by a group in Belgium. They did a Flemish cohort in Belgium. They analyzed about 1,000 microbiota samples of individuals that had depression and basically started to mine their microbiome for these what's called neuroactive metabolites, what's being made by the gut bacteria that can signal to the brain and vice versa.
Interesting. So you've talked, you gave us a definition of what a probiotic is. Also on your site at seed.com, we see the word prebiotic and also synbiotic, S-Y-N. What are those?
Yep. So you can think about it as very simple math. So prebiotics are, there's technically two definitions of it. One of it are basically, you know, it's preferentially complex carbohydrates, but it's anything that's food for bacteria, for beneficial bacteria in your gut. And so these are a lot in within food, prebiotics are found quite frequently in your complex vegetables. They're found in, you know, all long chain oligosaccharides, fibers. In basically every complex vegetable, it's loaded with these prebiotic fibers, and it's most concentrated in foods in the brassica genus, like, you know, Brussels sprouts, broccoli, kale, cauliflower. I mean, anything that fits this, you know, stocky or leafy vegetable class tends to have a lot of prebiotics in them. Also things like inulin that's found in garlic, onions, leeks, foods like these. So prebiotics, the one type of prebiotic are food, complex carbohydrates that good bacteria tend to prefer and can outcompete what you'd consider neutral or even suboptimal organisms in your gut. There's another type of prebiotics, which is an emerging field that's quite interesting. And these are compounds that can either be found in food or not, which are biotransformed by organisms in your gut into something which is very healthy or beneficial for your body. So I'll give you an example. When we were doing a lot of our early research and development, we clued in on this particular compound that's found in the pomegranate plant, and it's found in the skin as well as in the fruit itself and the seeds. And this compound is converted by specific bacteria in your gut into what's called a secondary metabolite. So this is something that's biotransformed from food into something completely new. It is a new chemical entity. And what this one in particular is called urolithin A. And if you do some research on urolithin A, you'll be pretty blown away. A couple of years ago, a group started to find and call this organism or this metabolite potentially the fountain of youth, because in animal studies, it was found to have these very potent regenerative effects on mitochondria function, on, you know, making these model organisms start to resemble younger versions of themselves. Now, while we aren't necessarily a company focused on aging, cellularly and molecularly, we found this to be extremely interesting, that gut bacteria can be evolved in the metabolism of food compounds to actually make them different. And we don't just see this prebiotic effect in things like pomegranate or in these other complex carbohydrates. You actually see it across a very wide range of food classes, and you can almost think of your microbiota being paired, right, with the inputs that you give it to optimize for this type of function. So another example is that in broccoli, there's a very potent class of compounds that are converted by gut bacteria into sulforaphane. And we now know that this is also another very potent anti-inflammatory and antioxidant, which also can have systemic signaling effects. So this is, in a nutshell, prebiotics are compounds that engage with your microbiota in ways which can be beneficial to you. And a symbiotic is much shorter and simpler. It's just when you pair a prebiotic and a cocktail of bacteria or probiotics together for some sort of synergistic effect.
Raja Dheer is the co-founder of Seed. It's a company that packages beneficial microbes into probiotic products. We're talking about 38 trillion microorganisms, mostly bacteria, living in and on us. It's our microbiome, our non-human half. I'm curious about something, Raja. Serotonin does a number of things in the way of regulating the human body, in addition to being a contributor to feelings of well-being and happiness. It is said that, people used to believe that it, for the most part, was produced and it resides in the brain. But someone recently told me that there's 90% more serotonin in the gut. Is that true? And what does that tell us?
It is true. And the number is about 94 to 95%. Of serotonin is produced locally. It's actually synthesized by bacteria in your gut. However, although I will confirm that very interesting hook, there is a catch to that statement, which is most of the serotonin that's produced by gut organisms does not actually cross the blood-brain barrier and have activity within the brain. So serotonin, as it's used as a mood regulator, directly as a neurotransmitter, is actually that 4 or 5% that is synthesized locally in the brain is still incredibly important. If there was something that was wrong with that production, you would have a total dysregulation of your neurological activity. However, precursors to that serotonin do cross the blood-brain barrier. And so scientists are really trying to unravel that complex interaction, whether those gut manufactured precursors are involved in how the brain makes its own serotonin. We don't really know that, but what we do know is gut organisms through serotonin, through its precursors, and indirectly through a whole another class of neuroactive metabolites do have a continuous crosstalk with the brain and are involved in not only neurotransmitter activity, but a range of neurological functions.
Yeah. Hey, you know, we only have a couple of minutes left, but I know one thing that we don't do very well, and that's predict the future. But let's have some fun with this. Let's go out 25, 50, and maybe 100 years. With the research that's being done right now and the promise of our microbiome to be able to help us in so many different ways, our approach to medicine, hygiene, diet, living, and all of that, what sort of possibilities are out there 25 years from now, 50 years from now?
Yeah, it's always fun to think about the future, but I do think it is a balancing act because overhyping can demoralize, I think, the research, which does tend to move at a slower pace than our expectations. And so I appreciate the time horizons that you mentioned seem to be a little bit realistic. 25 years, we'll probably get some pretty significant breakthroughs. But there's a couple areas that I think we're going to get the most tremendous breakthroughs. And actually, scientists that we work with directly and even academically are working on these areas and making breakthroughs today. So the first is, I think, that we will have a much more control in gut-mediated disorders. So people that have IBS is one of the most common GI conditions globally. It affects millions of people in the United States, and it's very poorly defined. But it's not just IBS. It's Crohn's disease. It's ulcerative colitis. There's a range of conditions that are chronic constipation. I mean, between these big four, almost half of Americans are affected. And so American adults are affected. And so I think that, we know that acting within the gut, either by modulating the gut microbiome or even introducing new organisms as probiotics or even engineered probiotics, where you send in organisms with these novel sensors to go in and find inflammation and sense it out. You know, these are all projects that we're working on very directly here at Seed. I think that's going to be very, very exciting. The second area I would say is that the microbiome isn't just in your gut, in your mouth, on your skin, in women's health, in the vaginal microbiome. There is a very relevant microbial community which is at play and involved in everything from skin disorders to dental caries to urinary tract infections, bacterial vaginosis, preterm birth. We now have beyond associative evidence that microbial communities and that changing them with what we call live biotherapeutics can have long-term persistent effects on the risk of infection and resolving reinfection. And so I think a lot of these current symptoms that desperately affect quality of life are going to have microbial interventions, the things that we put on our skin, the things that we give our infants, the things that we brush our teeth with, feminine hygiene products, just basic day-to-day life will completely change as we start to understand better how microbes are involved across all of these different areas.
Right.
And then the last area I would say is drug development. So autism, depression, cardiovascular disease, liver disorders, kidney disorders, all of these different areas have microbe and microbe-based interventions that are currently in late stages of preclinical research or phase one or phase two FDA trials.
Hey, Raja, we've got to wrap it up. Unfortunately, we've got to go to NPR News, but it is a fascinating subject. Raja Dhir from Seed, you can look it up, seed.com. Thank you so much for joining us today on Cool Science Radio.
Of course, thank you.
Thanks for tuning in to Cool Science Radio. If you missed part of the show or you want to share it, all our shows are posted within the hour on kpcw.org under the Shows tab.
We also podcast all of KPCW's Public Affair Hour shows wherever you find your podcasts, so you can find them under KPCW and the individual show name.
So look for KPCW Cool Science Radio and take us with you on your next road trip or commute.